This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
You're on Joy 94.9. You're with Mark and Fiona on the Escape Hour. Fiona, how has this autumnal weather treated you this week?
Yeah, not bad. I didn't mind the freshness, yeah. Although I'm definitely
well, it started off at 37 degrees.
Oh, I'm definitely not ready at all ready for the summer to end. But I did like the freshness that was out there. I had a hot weekend last weekend out and about. I was at a craft beer festival one day, that was hot, and then I went to an air show, the Avalon air show the next day, and that was really hot. So I
had a very hot experience after being out at a craft beer. What was it called?
It was called the Beer Insider Experience.
Beer Insider, but it was spelt in a clever way, wasn't it?
Insider, like as in cider, as in made of apples, witty.
Yeah, very punny.
It was a busy weekend, I have to say, last weekend, so I was a little tuckered out on Monday and happy for the weather to be a little bit cooler. How about you, Mark?
Busy working, that's all, and sort of working out my next travel schedule to get around this crazy brown land.
Right, yeah, you've been busy working and tripping off to other parts of the country for work.
Yeah. We're in my new role, it's a national role, so there's a bit of travel. And it's really great to work in other cities. That's one of the real benefits of the new job. You get to sit with the team in other cities. So I'm planning my next trip to Brisbane, Perth, Adelaide and Sydney. And it's great to be able to just sit and be a part of a city. And I find that a really great way to learn more about things, you know, just doing that day-to-day life.
I love going to other cities around Australia. They feel like they're I feel like I'm in a different country.
So familiar and so
I was in Adelaide the other day and I unfortunately wasn't there for long enough, but it was great to look at all the restaurants and, you know, go to all the wine bars and try to squeeze as much in while I was there, as well as fitting in some theatre and performance.
Adelaide's come so far so quickly in the last few years. It is a really worthwhile place to go, and the inner city of Adelaide is just spectacular. I took a walk around the Adelaide University grounds with the Torrens River, and I hadn't been around there for so long. And it is stunning.
Yeah, and I think one of the best restaurants in Australia is Orana, which is in Adelaide.
That East Terrace.
one best restaurant, I think it was last year.
Mm. Well, using a lot of Indigenous ingredients.
A lot of Indigenous ingredients. And speaking of best restaurants, we're in the middle of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, as mentioned.
Which is huge. It's been going for decades now, hasn't it, the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival?
I think that we might have someone in the office. Get out of work mode. We have someone in the studio. We have two people in the studio that can enlighten us here. So
that's very handy, and what a segue.
What a segue. So on that very topic, actually, Zenon Misko, who's the industry engagement manager for Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, can tell us how long Zenon has Melbourne Food and Wine been going for.
I can.
Good.
Great to be here. I'm pretty pumped. 27th year now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Super. And you have a new director this year?
Well, we do. CEO Anthea Lucas-Bosha, which is very exciting, and new creative director Pat Nurse as well.
It's great to have Anthea back. She's a Melbourne girl, of course, and in Sydney for many years as the editor of Gourmet Traveller.
Ah.
And then to swing Pat, who's a Sydney cider, to Melbourne.
Who's always wanted to live in Melbourne, and he's pretty pumped.
That's exciting, and he's arrived just on the cusp of our autumn. I hope he brought his woolies.
He has, but he's learning how to use Mikey and getting better at it.
And, it's tap and go.
And timing. He just arrives for the beginning of the festival.
Yeah. Oh, he gets all the sort of glory without doing any of the work. Yeah. Well, for this year anyway.
I'm sure they'll get their pound of flesh.
No, he's definitely done a lot of work already leading up to it.
And we also have a rock star in Mitz.
I know. Look, we don't get rock stars in our office, in our studio very often, do we?
No. Well, maybe because he's a chef, he's probably maybe more of a wok star.
Mark.
I'm trying.
That was good.
Do the best that I can today. Jordi Navarra.
Hello.
All the way from the Philippines, come to the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, and you are probably one of the world's most prominent Filipino chefs. I'm just saying that.
We try. We try our best.
You can't do it yourself. But you're the creative dynamo behind Toyo.
In Manila.
Yes. Yeah,
in Manila.
Toyo Eatery, yes. In
Toyo
Manila.
Eatery. And that's named after...
Toyo means soy sauce in Tagalog.
Yeah.
So we named it after soy sauce, which is very, like, everyday, very basic. And we sort of... relate to what soy sauce is.
So talk to us about your approach to Filipino food, because the big thing about it is the amount of islands in the Philippines. We discovered 7,107 in low tide, 7,108 islands.
Yeah, you know your numbers.
There's a lot of diversity. Talk to us how you bring that through your kitchen onto the plate.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, there's a lot of diversity in the Philippines. I think our cuisine is very, very regional. So... what's great about that for us is there's a lot to discover and a lot to learn about. And I guess we just try our best to represent where we're from and who we are.
So how do you typify the regions? Because there's a large Christian community, there's a large Muslim community, there's large Spanish influence, there's American influence.
Yes. And
there's Kenny Loggins roasters everywhere.
Yes, there is also. Yeah, so yeah, like you mentioned, it's a mix. One... very, very prominent Filipina chef, Margarita Flores, mentioned that Filipino food is one of the first fusion cuisines she mentioned. And I think there's a lot to that, because we talk about all the influences, but for us, we just grew up in it. So we just look at it as, oh, this is what we grew up on. This is what we understand. This is what we know.
So what typifies? Are you from Metro Manila? Is that,
yes.
Yeah. So what typifies the table of family in Metro Manila?
Well, you would have many influences. So I would say there's a strong Chinese influence in the city. And then also, of course, from being a former Spanish colony, we have a lot of Spanish-inspired dishes. And funny enough, if you go deep into Chinatown, you would have Chinese dishes with Spanish names.
What, like?
Like camarón rebozado. And it's basically shrimp fried in batter, Chinese style.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, so... It's that. Plus, you have the American influence also. Mm. Jollibee is pretty much like an American influenced Filipino fast food chain.
Explain Jollibee though, because it's I think it is a very passionate experience for a lot of Filipinos to go to Jollibee.
Yeah, it's just I think it just reminds a lot of Filipinos of what you would have back home. Mm. So, if you're a Filipino that moved away from the Philippines, Jollibee would be one thing where it'd be like, oh. I remember this from back home. Yeah. It's basically like burgers and fried chicken and things like that with, I guess, more of a Filipino taste.
Mm.
Yeah, so slightly more savory, slightly sweeter. Yeah.
Fried chicken makes such a big impact on a lot of aspects of Asian cuisines, Japanese fried chicken and, you Korean. Know, everyone, and Korean fried chicken. It's
KFC.
KFC, yeah, Korean fried chicken.
Now, it's the first time that you've been involved in Melbourne Food and Wine Festival
this
year.
Yes, and thank you for having us.
Melburnians, as you're probably aware, are insane for food, and they love experimenting and exploring other cuisines. And, you know, the great thing about what you're doing with Melbourne Food and Wine is that you've got a bunch of people focusing on Filipino cuisine: Nicole Poneska, Yasmin Newman, and Ross McGain from Rice Paper Scissors.
Yeah.
You're all teaming together to create a celebration of Filipino food.
Yes. Yeah, so yeah, we're doing a dinner next week, two nights. So we're trying to basically represent Filipino flavors. So we're going to do some dishes from the restaurant at Toyo, but we're also going to be very traditional with some dishes. I think Nicole has some of her dishes planned. Ross is also coming in and putting his spin on things. And I think it's going to be interesting because we're all Filipino from different backgrounds. So I'm Filipino that grew up in the Philippines. Ross grew up here. Nicole grew up in New York. Yasmin grew up here. So it's sort of like a different Filipinos growing up in different places and trying to find what connects us all, those flavors. So
what are the key flavors that you can share and bond over
I think generally you would say Filipinos have a very sour flavor profile. So we have a lot of sour notes from fermented sour to fresh sour. So, for example, you have kinilaw, which is like cooking with acid or altering textures with acid. That could be anything between fermented acid like vinegar to more fresh acid like citrus. So we have that range. Then we also like very savory notes. So hence soy sauce and fish sauce we call patis.
Right. Oh,
goodness, it sounds so good.
Yeah, and so the proteins, what typifies Filipino proteins?
Well, that gets regional also, but generally, since we're talking about 7,107 islands,
you've got to have a coast.
So, we're very seafood-based. So you'd see that most of the time. So, for example, at the restaurant, we would have a harder time catering to someone with a seafood allergy than it would with I don't eat meat. We're like, okay, that's cool.
So chicken as well? Is that
chicken?
Seafood.
Chicken, seafood, pork is a big thing. Pork. So that's basically like what we call fiesta food, like fun family food, like celebration food.
Is that, do you whole roast pork?
Yes.
How does it vary from how the babaguling of the Indonesian, the way they prepare their pork?
Babaguling. It's nice you mentioned. I think babaguling uses coffee wood and other things and some more of like a wood firewood smoke. In the Philippines, it's more like charcoal embers with literally a guy rotating. Nonstop for maybe 4.5 to 4.5 hours and
it's a good until workout.
It's a good workout. You also sort of negate it when you eat the pig after. But it's all good.
Because Toyo, the restaurant and the name and the concept behind it came from a nursery rhyme about 18 vegetables.
What a beautiful story. Yeah, one of our signature dishes, which I feel sort of represents the philosophy we have at the restaurant is called Bahay Kubo, which is a song that is taught to kids in the Philippines to learn about different vegetables that you would typically have. So it's like everyday veggies that you would find in the market. So yeah, we basically made a dish using all the 18 vegetables. We represent the song as a dish.
And that's on your menu all the time at Toyo?
Yeah, pretty much, yes.
Well, I just think that sounds gorgeous because there is an increasing emphasis on vegetables. And do you find that the Milanese dining scene, that sounded like the Milanese as in Milan.
Manilin.
Milanese. How do you find the locals are responding to that?
Well, people in Manila are sort of... I think we're growing as a restaurant town. So there's been more and more interesting places popping up, and it's great.
Filipinos are very international people.
Yes.
The greatest export out of the Philippines, I think, is labor.
Yes,
with people
that's
working
true.
All around the world.
Yeah, yeah. And Filipinos are known to be like super nice and
hardworking
and very friendly.
Good singers and good singers. Handwriting.
Yeah.
Immaculate handwriting.
True. Yeah.
Yes.
What a piece of trivia is that?
Yeah. Filipino handwriting is immaculate.
My wife takes pride in her handwriting, so I
we'll
can
have to
relate
get on
to
air
that.
And talk about that in a moment.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and singing.
And singing too.
Yeah.
Singing in general.
Is that right?
But not me. So you got the wrong Filipino.
You weren't blessed.
So you have bad handwriting and you can't sing.
Yeah.
You're letting the nation.
That's why we try to cook.
That's why he's a cook.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service.
Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the Featured Providers section within the iTunes Store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
You are on Joy 94.9. It is the Escape Hour, and we're talking all things Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, which is happening when? Now.
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 So, we have special guests, Fiona.
We do, we do. Jordy Navarro, who is visiting our shores from Manila because his restaurant is such hot property right now.
And one of the stars of the festival.
And one of the stars of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. And Zenon Misko from Melbourne Food and Wine Festival himself.
That's right, on day two of the journey of 17 days. So I'm pretty pumped.
Oh, well, we're going to talk to Zenon more about the festival, but while we have Jordy, who has been pulled out of prep specifically to talk to us.
Just for us.
Just for us. Your journey to becoming a chef, you didn't start out that way.
No, no, no. So basically you screw up other things and then you end up cooking.
But I think it's
a very noble profession.
Yeah.
People eat every day.
I think that's what's most attractive about it. Like you do, it's very basic, like, You cook and then someone eats and then they like it or not.
But you've got to be...
It's very philosophical.
It is, but I think that, you know, you have
they
to
like
be...
They like it or they don't.
You have to be inspired, though. I mean, and you've got to stay inspired and you've got to bring inspiration to the table and to the kitchen every single meal, every time you're cooking. So, I mean, that in itself is what makes, I guess, you know, a great chef. And also, may I mention that your restaurant, having only been open for, what, 2.5 years, is, you know, being listed as one to watch in the 50 best restaurants in Asia, which is no small feat.
No, that's a huge...
accomplishment.
Accomplishment. Thank you.
Yeah, we're just.
I'm glad you're better at cooking than I am at words.
No, I think we can. But yeah, it's amazing. Like we started out just wanting to represent where we are, where we're from, representing Filipino cooks and Filipinos in general. Shout out to everyone.
Shout out,
Mabuhay.
Yeah, Mabuhay. See, and then it brought us to this, like, just trying to get a bit better every day, trying to get a bit better every day. And now we're in Melbourne, Food and Wine, which is crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting that you mentioned the word wine. Filipino food, there's not a lot of native wine in the Philippines because it's a tropical country.
Yes. Yeah, no grapes.
Grape wine, but there must be other alcohol that accompanies the food that is indigenous to the Philippines.
Yeah. Well, at Toyo, we do a lot of cocktails using some of the local, like we would say, alcoholic beverages.
Yeah.
So there are a few things. We have like something called tapoy, which is sort of like our rice wine, but it's not like sake. If you taste it, it tastes more like a sherry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like it's quite sweet. We also have different fruit wines. So Bignay, which is like a berry, and everyone, well, we have this climate where everything sort of ferments, so after a while you can get an alcoholic kick.
Wow.
So you make it out of anything.
I would like to ask Zenon while he's here, you know, where is the inspiration from the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival's point of view to bring Philippine cuisine to the forefront?
Great question. So Melbourne being such a brilliant city, multicultural, I mean, we really do reflect so many cultures, which is a wonderful asset of ours. And it all started actually a bit over a year ago when I met up with a Filipino collective, a very, very talented and enthusiastic group of girls under the banner of Entrepreneurs. Love their energy from the moment we met. I think we had an awkward meeting when we first met, when I was meant to be paying for coffee, but they went up and bought their coffee before we met. But anyway, it all got sorted out. And they brought this whole idea of we want to talk about Barrio, the idea behind neighbourhood and community, and we want to raise the profile of Filipino cuisine. in Melbourne and do it during the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. So immediately we just bonded, connected, loved their energy, and from there it just sparked into a whole range of international talent that is coming over into dinners at Rice Paper Sister, into integrating them into our workshops at the House of Food and Wine, which I'll talk about shortly, and just to really talk about Filipino cuisine, which again, I'll have to be very honest, I love my food. I eat all over Melbourne. I love all foods and all cultures, but I haven't had a lot of Filipino cuisine, so I'm looking forward to diving in and trying a bit. And I'll be there on Wednesday night. Very lucky enough to be there, and I can't wait.
Oh, thank you for coming out.
The ringing endorsement.
And what?
The ringing endorsement.
Yes.
Geordie, yeah. During a cooking lesson about Filipino cuisine, what would be some of the basics that you would be instructing people?
We're very much into condiments. Eating, so whenever there's a dish, there's always something you should eat it with. So we're gonna try and bring out a range of condiments. So so it's sort of like a nice range of flavors that you would sort of see if you go to the Philippines, like typically.
So you were talking before about there was a lot of savory, sour that
yes.
goes with that. So is that the typical of the condiments? Is it a lot of chili based, or is it salt? Is it acid?
Is it pickles?
Pickled, fermented?
Yeah, there's a range. So sometimes it's just as simple as fish sauce and citrus. Right. We have other condiments like fermented shrimp paste and things that sometimes it's just as simple also as vinegar with chilies. So we're gonna try and bring out these dishes that you're gonna have a range of condiments that that you would have.
But I guess you don't make the condiments; they tend to be commercially made because of they sound complex. Am I wrong?
We actually at Toyo we try our best to make all the condiments. So
right.
So
well, not at Toya.
In general.
Yeah, in general, like a Filipino
At the home, yeah. Because for example, soy sauce or vinegar, if you make it, take you a few months, right?
Yeah. So
but there are a lot of things that you can certainly make at home. I mean, I remember as a kid making mint sauce for the lamb. And, you know, my grandmother would have the mint jelly in the jar, but my mom would just make it with lemon juice, sugar, vinegar, and mashed up mint. Mm. And that was mint sauce. You can do a lot very simply.
Yeah, the fermented ones and the more brewed things that seem quite complex. And not a thing you'd buy at home, you buy.
Yeah. Also they're like quirky things like banana ketchup, things like that.
Oh,
yeah.
Banana ketchup.
Talk to us about banana ketchup.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That sounds wild.
Yeah.
What does that taste like?
It's sweet and sour like normal ketchup, but with bananas. So
I can't imagine it.
We should come down.
Yeah, I think if you want to know more about banana ketchup.
I think that could be really divisive, banana ketchup. And what about from an ingredients point of view? I mean, is there any sort of like key ingredients or vegetables that will be part of that conversation?
Generally with Filipinos love garlic. So that's probably something you will for sure encounter. Garlic and onions, typical tomatoes, things like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It sounds incredibly delicious. So the cooking part will be held when?
We're doing the first dinner on Tuesday.
Yep.
At Rice Paper Sister.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the second dinner on Wednesday.
They're sold out, which is great news.
Sold out.
But we can talk about you appearing in the House of Food and Wine,
yes.
which will be on tomorrow, won't you? At 2:45 till 3:30, won't you?
Yes. Yes. So we're repping... with Entrepreneurs and Nicole and Ross. Also, a shout out to John Rivera, who's a Filipino chef also here.
Fantastic.
In Melbourne. So,
well, thank you, listeners. There it is. You don't have to go to the fancy sold-out show. You can come down to the House of Food and Wine, which is down in the Acca Forecourt. Is that correct?
Malthouse Theatre.
Malthouse Theatre, which is on South Bank Sturt Street.
That's right.
Sturt Street. Give yourself some extra time to get down there, listeners, because there is roadworks along there. But it's a fantastic setup that you've got for Melbourne Food Wine, for the House of Food and Wine this year. Mm.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Geordie, he was so lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's Philippine cuisine.
Yeah, well, you know, top 50 restaurants in Asia is a big call. So it's a big honour to have him in the studio.
It was very exciting, and we thank the team at Melbourne Food and Wine Festival for helping us out.
And look forward to seeing some more promotion of Filipino food, because every other Asian culture seems to be so well represented, from the high street to the highest level of cuisine, whether it be Japanese, Chinese,
Indonesians a little bit underrepresented.
Malaysia is a bit under, but they're there, you know what I mean? And I'd love to see Filipino food more represented. But you know who can tell us how that's going to happen?
Zenon Misko.
Zenon Misko.
Hi there.
Who's our guest from the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival.
Thank you for having me.
So take us back. You were mentioning before this story about how you met some Filipino chefs. And the Philippines is a country where people there's a huge diaspora. There are Filipino people all over the world working. It's their biggest export is labour. When we look at how Filipino culture has impressed itself on other countries, it doesn't seem to have had the same carry through from a cuisine perspective as Chinese, Japanese, Indian, you know, so many other cultures. And Korean is having this big surge in popularity at the moment. But you were talking to Filipino chefs and getting them together.
Yeah, it wasn't Filipino chefs. It was the so it's a group of girls. The entrepreneurs, they were very passionate about Filipino cuisine, and their idea was to bring over some Filipino chefs to then create some awareness. And you know,
so they were Filipino people of Filipino heritage who were interested
So they from a range of backgrounds as well. Right. So corporate backgrounds, food background as well.
So they decided that this would be a great thing to add to the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, which you obviously embraced.
Absolutely. So we are all about promoting Victoria and Melbourne, local produce, but we're a global festival as well. And we're all about, inviting the world to be a part of it. And we thought, you know, there have been a sprinkling of Filipino events in the past throughout our 27-year history, but we thought, no, 2019, I think this is the year we're going to actually, you know, really embrace it and get it out there.
What other cuisines and other chefs have been represented from around the world at Melbourne Food and Wine Festival this year?
Okay, if we go into that, we have a... cool. So, look, I mean, it's a good segue into the House of Food and Wine, but every year we do invite international chefs and to come over and be part of our program. This year we've got a range of chefs coming in from Copenhagen. We've got chefs coming in from Hong Kong. We've got chefs coming in from Singapore. So all around the world. So, yeah.
And, of course, they want to come to Melbourne because Melbourne has... I mean, I don't know how it happened, but Melbourne has a reputation worldwide as being a fantastic food city.
It does. I mean, I think you both believe that, don't you?
We do believe that. Yeah. But, you know, I grew up in Melbourne in the 1980s, and just I know that there were some amazing restaurants back there, and we had some incredible restaurant pioneers that, set it up. But it was certainly a restaurant industry back then, which was really for a select few. And the magical component, the magical thing about the Melbourne food scene is that it's really open and accessible for everybody, which is what makes it great.
It's funny that you asked that, because it's the international guests that we've had who sell us what we have in a very compelling way that makes you realise what we do have here. And I think we take it for granted to a degree that we have the accessibility of, you know, even a dumpling restaurant like Hung Tong, which is just so accessible.
Yep.
And the quality of the product that's coming out of, and these are multicultural gifts to Melbourne, that people are coming from China or coming from the Philippines or wherever and bringing such authentic interpretations with high quality ingredients. And we had someone from China a while ago, he eats out Chinese food, high-end food here in Australia, because he can't trust what you get in China. He'll eat in Singapore or Malaysia, but he can't trust what
I have friends who do that as well. Yeah. So they come here and are actually excited to come to Melbourne to eat Thai to eat Chinese, and they trust the quality of the produce and they love it.
No, it's not just Melbourne. Singapore's another perfect example of a place where people go. But China's one of those places, even high-end restaurants, they substitute ingredients where possible if it's just not there for the day, and they don't necessarily tell you up front.
Mm. It's a funny thing, because you would imagine they would have access to any foods that they want at any given time, in the big restaurants in China. So I don't know if I was here that day because I don't remember having that conversation.
You may not have been. Yeah, it was a really interesting conversation.
I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. And it's when people go, you guys take your city for granted, be proud of it, embrace it, and go out and do something about it because people look forward to coming here. And I think this is a real emblematic thing about the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival is that people are coming in from all the place. They trust it and the brand is there already and they get to show off what they can do and bring and it gets so well embraced. So 27 years of doing this.
We have, and we've grown from a small festival. It might have been about 10 events back in 1993, was it? All the way through to now to over 250 events.
So you're talking about the House of Food?
House of Food and Wine. Will be more than wine in there. There'll be drink, there'll be cocktails, there'll be coffee. House of Food and Wine.
So what is the House of Food and Wine?
So it's been running for a few years now. Effectively, it's our hub for the opening weekend.
Which is this weekend?
This weekend, exactly. It'll be open today, tomorrow, and the public holiday, Labor Day on Monday, at the Malthouse Theatre.
That was my next question.
Yep. So Malthouse Theatre, doors open at midday each day till 6 p.m. We're effectively labelling it a gastronomic playground. Come and have some fun, come and play. We're going to have everything from pop-up bars, restaurants. We've got cocktails being made. We've got talks and workshops. We've got, Geordie and other chefs doing their demos. So a whole range of things happening.
And it's free to enter.
No, it's not, actually. sorry, that would be...
That's good to know.
No, we've had hubs that are free, but no, this is sort of combining. It's a bit of a gastronomy focus. So it's combining our signature brand, which was always Masterclass. So for the people that love their food and wine, to come on down and to actually watch them in action, watch the demos. Then we've got our Theatre of Ideas. That'll involve a whole range of talks, and we're looking at important issues in food. Food and drink and hospitality, looking at the future of food, a whole range of things with a lot of talent in there as well. So there, for your ticket, which is $65, they'll be available on the door. That'll get you access, demos, talks, and then the option of being able to buy a whole range of food and beverages. Plus, we have a full day, every day we have a rosé tasting being put on by vintage sellers, where you'll be able to try 12 rosés from around the world as well.
12?
Yep.
Well, that's for like 12 noon till 6.
Yes.
So it's a lot of stuff you could pack in for the price.
A lot. There's a lot happening in there. I can just go through a bit of it now. But effectively, it's going to be fun. There'll be a bit of entertainment. Come on down. We're going to have everybody will get a dessert as well from Sunday Ice Creamery in Caulfield. Mm-hmm. So beautiful desserts have been made for the festival as part of that. One highlight on Monday on the public holiday, if you haven't made your Labor Day plans yet, we've got Curtis Stone coming in from LA, so he'll be here doing a...
famous.
So it's pretty famous, and he's always pretty easy on the eye, so he'll be doing a barbecue with local butchers Meatsmith, which is pretty exciting. So that'll be 12:30 till 2:30. So
not vegan compliant.
there'll be vegetables and sides and there'll be other things. But the focus on that is a meat barbecue. So think pastrami. I think he's doing flank as well.
Okay, interesting cuts.
So a few cuts and $20 a pop for those. But should be great. And then you can watch him in action in doing a demo a bit later in the afternoon.
Is there any vegan option now that we've thought of? Do you know off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, not in terms of, but definitely vegan options there. But off the top of my head, I'm going to have to go through my notes quickly. Thank you for testing me, though.
That's all right. But as long as if someone's listening as vegan is interested, that there is an opportunity for them. They're not just going to be surrounded by corpses.
No, definitely not.
Well, I think that there is, as we know, an increased interest in vegan food, veganism in a lot of restaurants, and a lot of restaurants are supplying. So I'm sure that during the festival, there are probably a couple of vegan-specific events that people can attend.
We do. We have up to about 10 specific events on the festival. You can jump online and you can actually just enter vegan into the website, and they should bring them up at a whole range over the next 17 days.
Yeah. I certainly went to a vegan paella evening a couple of years ago. Actually, it was a different food. It was a different festival. It wasn't a food festival. It was a beer festival. Mm-hmm. But I went to a vegan paella night at Smith and Daughters, and that was interesting, I have to say.
Yeah.
But, I think that's the incredible thing about the festival. It does have something for all palates and pockets.
Yeah, I just had a quick look about the vegan. Yep. There's an Ethiopian vegan feast.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Happening at Conjo. So, great little team out there, and they've been flying.
Footscray.
Yeah, in Footscray. Cabaret, flying the flag for African cuisine for many years. Yeah, so that should be a really nice event. And look, that's really quite raw as well. So over the years, they've run events where, you know, you are using your hands and your no cutlery, and really, it's really authentic. So yeah.
Oh, that's the fun thing about Ethiopia.
And Le Bon Temps are doing a vegan smokehouse barbecue because they're so famous for their meat, aren't they?
Yeah, they're running them over the weekends, and yeah, so tickets still remaining for those. So jump in. Yep.
Fantastic. Okay, so we've got some vegan options.
Yep.
And now I guess this is one of the trickiest things that happens whenever we interview someone who, you know, represents a bigger festival. You know, and I understand when you can't have favourites, but if there were some things that, you know...
Which is your favourite child.
You know, what do you think are some fabulous, like, unique offerings for the festival, or, like, something that's just a classic that always, you know, does well?
Great. All right. Well...
Or a new discovery.
New discovery. All right. I'll go through a few that I think are pretty exciting happening. We've got one tomorrow, an event that's going to be a Palermo street food party. So have you been to Palermo before in Sicily?
No. I wanted to go so much, but I got stuck in Positano.
Okay.
Fair enough.
I've been over. Street food's great. So it's being run by the team at Osteria Ilaria in the city who...
Oh, Little Burke Street. Oh, Little Burke Street,
yeah, who also own Tipo, 00, so which we love. Yeah, so they're effectively doing a street party and ripping out the chairs and tables of Osteria Ilaria and doing a big Palermo street food party.
Wow, that sounds like fun.
Oh, so, yeah, because that little laneway, it's not hard.
No, yet. Warburton Lane there. Yeah. Yep, so they've got... that'll be open till about 5 o'clock is the laneway party, and then it's going to be taken indoors. So they're going to have DJs, street food. We've got Giorgio Di Maria, who is a no sulfur wine guy in Australia, who's one of the leaders of serving and no sulfur and natural wine. So he's going to be coming in for it and serving that. It's just going to be a great event going till late, and it's free entry. Free entry, no bookings. So, and I'm going to cap
that's
it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's, you know, you've got to book ahead if you want to get to Ilaria Osteria.
Yes, you do. So it's one of Melbourne's hottest restaurants. So they're doing something completely unique. And that's what we aim for the festival. So we can go to Morvita any night of the week. We can go to Osteria Ilaria. We can go to Mamacita. They're busy. They're vibrant. Mm. And that's what makes Melbourne great. But what we challenge people to do is to actually get outside your comfort zone a little bit. Let's celebrate what you do, but let's actually elevate it. The festival crowd, Melbourne audiences, they expect a lot. They're food savvy. They love it. And that's what we aim to achieve. So that's one of those that I think will be... Yeah, a lot of fun.
It's an important distinction that it's not like you can go to a restaurant and just have the food delivered to you from the menu. Every venue that's involved has presented a special offering that you don't normally get every day, which is one of the reasons why it's worth engaging and making sure you get to some events, because you're going to experience a restaurant like you normally never would.
Like you never would. One-off, unique, fun, festive. Yeah. And that's what we're about.
That's the exciting thing. I remember Sasha Randall, who was the chef at Apoka a while ago. She used to lead with the vegetables and the protein was the support. And it was just such a unique approach that she had to things. It just made you think differently about the meal. And the experience was out of this world. And I remember it today.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so this is the opportunity you get with the chefs turning around and doing their thing.
Yep.
Instead of just doing what sells or is profitable, they're showing off, aren't they?
They are. And further to that event, and then I'll move on from it, but we've also got Pasi Petanen from Sydney as well, so great chef who's coming in for it as well with Giorgio, so it's going to be a lot of fun. So he'll be teaming up with Andreas from Osteria, and they're going to be doing Palermo street food, so it's going to be kind of fun. So I think I'm going to pop in as well.
And what's next on your list?
What is next? Okay, a bit more high-end. We've got Attica, as we all know, one of our most celebrated restaurants.
Glen Huntley Road.
Yes, and what are they doing? It's going to be Anarchy at Attica. So,
Oh, my God, that's the last place where you would expect anarchy because it's so reserved. I mean, all the anarchy is on your plate.
Yes.
It's elegant, I think.
But the atmosphere is restrained.
It's serene. It's very,
serene. That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. So anyway, again, heightened, unique, one-off for the festival. The team at Attica, they're going to be cooking for their chef, Ben Shuri, and the diners. So he's going to be seated and they're going to be cooking for him. So we don't know what to expect, but we are pretty excited as well. So... It is for sale. Tickets are available. Not many, but I would urge you to jump on if you want to be a part of that, because that won't happen again.
Yeah, that sounds really wacky.
What, cool. Does Ben not trust his staff?
Oh, you can pick that up with Ben and the team. I won't jump into that. Cool.
I think you trust them very much.
Yes.
It's a very good team.
Do I have time for a couple more quickly?
Yeah,
or not?
Yeah. Oh, we've got tons of time.
Well, 12 minutes.
Okay, cool. All right, a quick couple of pop-ups that are happening up at Press Club and at their at their experimental kitchen next door. I'm not sure if you know it, but it's a little bar
I've passed by and I'm like, what's in that little hole in the wall?
Yeah, that's where they innovate and do a bit of testing and, you know. And
okay.
Yeah, so they've got a couple of pop-ups during the festival. One is going to be a souvlaki pop-up where they're going to be doing three different souvlakis on three different nights. Really innovative, focusing on Victorian produce. So that'll be happening for about $38 or whatever it is. That's happening, and they're also doing...
So we're not just talking about a souva wrapped in alfoil. We're talking about...
Which is fine, depending on what time of night or morning it is. But
But we're talking about something a little fancier than that, I'm sure. What are they thinking of? Is it a surprise?
It's going to be a bit of a surprise, but we can definitely trust that team that they're going to deliver. And you'll get a drink with that, and you'll get chips as well. But they're also doing a Greek dessert pop up as well, looking at donuts. So they're going to be doing some savoury and sweet donuts.
Ah, with the powdered sugar.
All of that, yeah. So arranged with a cocktail as well in there, and that's going to be another only for three nights as well. That'll be happening. So So I'd urge you to get a spot there.
Now, Zen, you've been working for Melbourne Food and Wine Festival now for, is it 5 or 6 years?
I'm going into my seventh festival. Can you believe it?
Wow. That is incredible. Mm. And you've had such an impact on the direction of the festival. Maybe you could give our listeners a bit of a guide of what kind of, like, how you got inspired to work in food and wine and what drives you.
Mm.
I mean... You know, how do you, what inspires you from a food and wine perspective?
Well, I think I've got a blurb on the website about myself that we had to write, but effectively, it all started, you know, being the Ukrainian heritage. Mm. So we grew up with, my parents were born in Ukraine and migrated after World War II, and food was central to the way we lived. We were always around the table. Then my mum ended up having our five boys, my mum and dad, who loved their food, each one as much as the other. So we just loved to eat. We were brought up around food, around cooking. And then I was always very passionate about food and eating out as well, not just cooking at home. I've got a legal background, a marketing background, but I always wanted to be involved in food and wine. And then I persevered. I set a target to work at Melbourne Food and Wine Festival because I loved the brand. I loved what it was doing. Persevered, and I landed a job in the team, and I haven't looked back.
Great story. I mean, I knew a little bit about your heritage, but I didn't know how much you were personally driven to work for Melbourne Food and Wine.
It was. It was actually identified as that I wanted to work for Melbourne Food and Wine, and it all happened. And but the beauty is it's actually great to care and to actually be really passionate about how amazing Melbourne, but especially regional Victoria is, and all these incredible landscapes and the produce and the food and the diversity of regional Victoria, our incredible wines, our amazing farmers, but also the natural beauty from, you know, Great Ocean Road to the villages of the high country to Yarra Valley and Mornington on your doorstep, through to Ballarat and Bendigo and the goldfields and all the way up into Grampians and the Murray. We are very spoiled and we should be getting out there more, and I really make an effort to. We have to be just getting out there.
Well, it is, rural and regional Victoria, of course, has expanded and, has so much more to see than what people even imagine, and you do have to get out there. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, we had a lovely winemaker from the Pyrenees in, and he was hilarious. He was telling us about how the Pyrenees is in the middle of nowhere but everywhere at the same time. It was just gorgeous, and he was describing, you know, the climate, and it was just so beautiful. So that's what people need to get out and about. And we were talking about how wonderful it was that the wineries weren't as crowded as other parts of the state, where there's a... But indeed, people need to think about getting out of town.
And it might be a good segue to our regional weekend, potentially.
Talk about regional weekends.
Regional weekends. So middle weekend on the 15th to the 17th of March, we have a dedicated regional weekend where we're going dark in Melbourne. No events are taking place in Melbourne. Maybe a couple little things are happening here or there. But we are encouraging everybody to get out of Melbourne. Grand Prix is on, so Melbourne is going to be very busy. If the Grand Prix isn't your thing, get out of Melbourne. And we have over 70 events in total happening all around the state. kicking off on Friday at midday with 19 long lunches happening on by the beach, riverside, near the mountains, farms, wineries, you name it, through to a whole calendar of events taking place all around Victoria on that weekend. So I'll be getting out and about and putting together my itinerary as we speak, but I'll be around, I'll be getting out from Friday to Sunday.
Well, you won't be able to do all those 19 long lunches, unfortunately.
Yes.
Which long lunch have you chosen to attend?
Wow, I'm 50-50 and I'm not gonna say it out loud. I'm still not quite there
okay.
yet.
So
don't commit.
No, because they're that good. It's amazing because the great thing about them, each lunch is all about celebrating that region and that area. So through the winemakers, distillers, brewers, but also the chefs, the restaurants, the farmers, producers. So each lunch is for a minimum of 100 people, some of them for over 250. Mm. One long table, country hospitality. Even if you are working, take off that Friday, get out there, take friends, stay overnight, stay the Friday night, and then embrace that part of the world.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We have Zenon here from the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, who is just wrapping up on, started today, right?
Yesterday.
Yep. 17 days, just wrapping up your thoughts on where things were going. But there's other things you guys do too, right?
Oh, yeah, over 200 of them, or 250. So they're all in my head. We have, yeah, so jump online, have a look. A lot of events every night of the week and day of the week. Quick things that may be of interest that are fun, accessible. We have our Cult Crawl and Bite program, which is all about progressive dining.
I've done one of those once. It was super fun.
Super fun.
You get a little walk-in between courses.
You do. So three venues in one night. You have a bite and a drink at each. So if you just want to get out on a Monday or Tuesday night, or if you want to try a few new venues in Melbourne, I think it's a great opportunity. So we have definitely some tickets left for that at $78. And the other thing I think I should mention is River Graze, which is our closing weekend, the 22nd to the 24th of March. Free, accessible, family-friendly. We are activating all the way down from Arts Precinct through to Crown Promenade. There's going to be a big winery tasting on with 30 Victorian wineries. We've got a free whiskey tasting with local distillers, Starwood Whiskey. So if whiskey is your thing, we've got lots of activities for the kids as well. Who have we got, Stephanie?
Is that whiskey for the kids? Or
I think some parents might want to give their kids some whiskey.
Yes. Yeah. And then just a whole range of things that we've got food trucks and, you know, some other activations and, yeah.
So. And did you mention Stephanie Alexander will be there?
She will be there with her team, and they'll be doing, I think, focusing on preserving and a lot of jars involved again. So little workshops for younger ones and teenagers, but definitely, obviously, for the adults as well.
Yeah, Stephanie Alexander's fascinating because that huge book that she has had out for years and years and years with all of those classic recipes. It's basically anything from your mum's childhood, your grandma's childhood, your childhood, the classic way to do everything.
I met someone who said the other day that anyone who gets married, she buys that book for them.
That's a beautiful gift.
It's a beautiful gift. My sister got two copies. I thought I would inherit one, but I think it went to some other sister.
I've got mine. What a legend of the industry. Yeah.
She really is incredible and does a lot of work around education for kids to learn about food.
Yeah. That's the amazing thing. She just wants everyone to know how to do things better.
Did you know that like 30% of children show up at school without having eaten breakfast?
What?
Mm. Yep.
Parents
don't always supply their kids with breakfast.
I'd like to know, what about corporates and office workers and how many of them aren't having breakfast?
Yeah, but they're adults. That's their choice.
Yeah.
You do sometimes see people eating in their cars.
Yes.
A bowl of cereal I saw the other day eating.
You really did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's terrifying.
That is.
Well, we're talking about all the good things of food, not some scary things about people's eating habits. But the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival is here to encourage everyone to get out, eat, experience, enjoy everything we have. Zenon, thank you so much for coming in and giving us the rundown and talking to us about how the festival goes about engaging people like Geordie.
Yep. Just remind us of the website again.
melbourneFoodandWine.com.au or mfwf.com.au, and the festival is on from the 8th to the 24th of March.
Mark, I think that, you know, you and I need to get Stefan and Russ and Razzle up and participate in something.
I'm thinking of popping down to the House of Wine and Love or whatever it's called this afternoon and just get my $65 worth.
I am popping down. I'll be there, so can't wait.
All right.
Excellent. You're on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.